Today on CyberWork, I speak to Jessica Gulick of Cat's Eye about the gamification of security and security awareness training, the Women's Society of Cyber Jitsu, and the ways in which cyber games could be the next esports. That's all today on CyberWork. Also, let's talk about our new hands-on training series titled CyberWork Applied. Tune in as expert InfoSec instructors and industry practitioners teach you a new cybersecurity skill, then show you how that skill applies to real-world scenarios. You'll learn how to carry out different cyber attacks, practice using common cybersecurity tools, follow along with walkthroughs of how major breaches occurred, and more. Best of all, it's free. Go to infosecinstitute.com/learn or check out the link in the description and get started with hands-on training in a fun environment. It's a new way to learn crucial cybersecurity skills and keep the skills you have relevant. That's infosecinstitute.com/learn. And now, on with the show. Welcome to this week's episode of the CyberWork with InfoSec podcast. Each week, we talk with a different industry thought leader about cybersecurity trends, the way those trends affect the work of InfoSec professionals, while offering tips for breaking in or moving up the ladder in the cybersecurity industry. Jessica Gulick is CEO of Cat's Eye, a woman-owned growth firm specializing in cybersecurity marketing and cyber games. She's also president of the board at the Women's Society of Cyber Jitsu, a 501c3 dedicated to advancing women in cyber careers. Jessica is a 20-year veteran in the cybersecurity industry and a CISSP. So with the recent announcement that InfoSec has partnered with ChooseCo to create a Choose Your Own Adventure branded security awareness training program, very exciting. We're aiming to speak with some guests about the concept of gamification in security and security awareness training. With Jessica's involvement in the Wicked Sick Cyber Games Tournament in Las Vegas and the Cyber Carnival of Games for Cybersecurity Awareness Month, Jessica certainly knows how to move beyond the superficial trappings of what we think of as gamification into creating programs that engage in the way that only brain-stretching games can. So let's get into it. Jessica, welcome to CyberWork.
Thank you. I'm very honored to be here.
I appreciate that. So, you know, we always like to start with a bit of an origin story question. So how did you first get involved or interested in cybersecurity? What was the initial attraction and what was the first thing you did once you learned about it?
So my story in cybersecurity really started a few days after 9/11, believe it or not.
Okay.
We had just moved to DC. My husband had a job up here. I was able to get a job for a contracting firm supporting the Department of the State Department. Mm-hmm. So if you imagine, I had just gotten my bachelor's, fresh out of school, first real job, if you will, in security, and was working for what was IRM at the State Department, doing database work, creating a vulnerability database, and then training people that were going out to the consulates and the embassies on how to do IT contingency planning. So that's kind of where my start was. Okay. I would say what I love most is that I was supporting a mission.
Yeah.
You know, at the time I had one kid, I had another kid on the way. It was just great to know that the time away from family was worth it because I was helping protect others.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, moving from there, you know, it seems like you went through a series of sort of threat intelligence and related positions before, you know, working for ISC Squared and others. Can you talk about from beyond that to your business journey? Like, what were some of the milestones that you remember that brought you to where you are now, whether it's, you know, projects you completed or skills you learned or positions held or what have you?
Yeah. So I would say from State Department, which is really, I was a dedicated contractor on site, if you will. I moved to another contracting firm, SAIC, and that allowed me to support multiple different federal clients and commercial bank clients that were integrated with the federal clients, so what we call trusted agents. My work turned to be more around certification and accreditation. I was still doing a lot of performance metrics and assessments in security. But it was a great opportunity there because I was able to contribute to a number of the NIST special publications, right? The standards around security in the life cycle, et cetera. And I got to work with a fabulous team of folks. I was project manager, program manager, if you will, over about 34 security professionals at the time, a mixture of penetration testing, forensics, policy, et cetera. And that was just a really great time to give me a full experience across different clients. And what was going on in the market. My world changed, though. Somebody else's world took a negative turn, if you will, and I was asked to take a step in and take over marketing for cybersecurity at SAIC. And that was a huge step. I hadn't done it. All I had was my MBA at that point in terms of experience and doing some sales for my own work. And what we ended up doing was taking a very thought leadership role to our marketing and being known for something called MDC3 at the time, which was the Maryland Cyber Challenge and Competition. It was a group of folks that I took part with that we really tried to drive home cyber competition, cyber education, et cetera, right in one regional space, right? Mm-hmm. At the same time, we were supporting something called Cyber Patriot, which is a well-known high school cyber competition.
Right.
We were part of the initial team to start that. Hmm. And my role there was really on marketing and oversight of some of the event activities, et cetera. So there was a larger team at play. So that was really critical to my career because it put me from doing hands-on certification and accreditation or managing a team doing forensics and penetration testing into the marketing world. Hmm. And into the world from a technical standpoint, right? We were doing cyber games and we took it to the UK and Utah and Colorado and got to really experiment with high school, college, and professional games. Wow. From there, I kind of took another turn in my career. I accepted a position as a global CMO, a chief marketing officer for a startup. We had a new product that we were taking that first started in telecommunications and we were taking it to other industries. And I was able to take a leadership role in starting a new market segment that we all now call SOAR, Security Orchestration Automation and Reporting. We were one of the first ones during Automate or Die and RSA if you were there.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was a great experience, a great team. Again, another turn. And then I found myself running my own business, Cat's Eye.
Yeah.
Which was fun.
Can we talk?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can we talk about your day-to-day job as CEO of Cat's Eye? Like what type of tasks do you do every day? Like what, you know, all of our listeners tend to think like, ooh, I would like to be a CEO someday, or I'd like to start my own company. Like what is the actual nuts and bolts of what you do, with Cat's Eye? And what is Cat's Eye about?
So Cat's Eye is a growth company, number one. We help grow startups and small businesses in cybersecurity and IT, but we also help grow professionals through cyber games and events. And it's different being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
It changed my life. It changed the way I look at things. you know, when all the responsibility is on your shoulder, it can be life-changing. But I love it. I do. So the hours aren't your typical hours. They're not 9 to 5. It's kind of constant. In terms of everyday tasks, it could be anything from payroll to sales to getting in and actually doing strategy work for clients on how do you position this product or this service, all the way to how are we going to run games and what do the players want and how do we set up this tournament and which partners do we want to bring involved? What I love is that it changes every day. The cool part is being your own CEO, if you will, having your own company, you get to decide who you work with. And yeah. I love working with passionate people about cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably the best part.
Nice. What types of work problems keep you up at 3 a.m. or wake you up in the middle of the night at 3 a.m.? Like what are the, like the stressors or the things that, you know, that.
It's different, right? Because I remember the days working in cybersecurity, what was waking me up was there's a pen test going on at night, you know, out mm-hmm. in California. What are they going to break? What's going to happen?
Yeah.
And I was constantly on call for things like that whenever it had to be escalated. But now it's really about trying to work out problems in your head, right? Because you're in mm-hmm. meetings all day long. So really the only time your brain shuts down and can really think through things is at night. So let's see, last night I was thinking through, you know, we had this big launch for the company called playcyber.com and we're trying to figure out, you know, how we're going to come up with some amazing games throughout the year. And we, you know, there's, it's funny. One of the challenges I think the market has and what I'm kind of grappling right now in terms of workforce is there's a lot of discussion around pipeline, Chris. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows it's important to try to push more people into cybersecurity jobs.
Sure.
But one of the things not being as explored as much, I would say, is the fact that there's burnout, right?
Okay. Yes.
In our community, our workforce, cybersecurity, there's a huge amount of burnout. And what we have is these brilliant cybersecurity people that go through college, they get their careers, and they're excited and they're passionate about cybersecurity, right? And then they get locked into a position either at a SOC or working for a company. Yep. And all of a sudden, boredom of mundane task and am I really helping anybody? Am mm-hmm. I just clocking hours?
Yes.
Really kind of sets in. And so the question becomes, how do we spark those individuals, you know, give them an ignition, you know, give them yeah. some kind of re-spark into cybersecurity? And I know that there's an answer with cyber games, but you don't know how to get it so that corporations really can really appreciate the value of cyber games. So that's something I'm constantly thinking through. And last night I was up at 3 a.m., you know, really kind of thinking through, you know, specifically what can I do to help contribute to that problem or contribute to the problem, help solve that problem.
Help solve the problem. Yeah. yeah. So to that end, I was thinking, you know, as soon as you said burnout, my first thought was the opposite. And apparently I was wrong, but, you know, thinking in terms of people burning out, you know, you hear the stories about how, you know, information and cybersecurity moves so quickly that, you know, within 6 months, you know, half of, you know, what you know is obsolete and you're having to constantly learn new things. But there's a give and take between that, as you say, and you're just doing the same repetitive tasks every day. You're reading the log files, you're doing this, you're doing basic pen tests or whatever. Are those two things in tandem, or would people actually prefer, you know, being having to learn sort of all these new sort of updates to, you know, security and technology?
Well, I think they feel like they have to learn, but they don't have a way to learn.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. if you look at certifications right now on the market, you're really dropping 5, 10, 15K.
Yeah.
If you're lucky, your company's paying for it. Right. But even if they're paying for it, it's going to take you weeks, months, to study. And, you know, sometimes you need that and that's important, but sometimes you just need to like learn from others and have quick tactics and such. Yes. So I think that's where we can really start to unravel. And it's funny, one of the statistics that, as you know, and I'm very much dedicated and passionate about women in cybersecurity.
Yes.
You will recall one of the statistics that we looked at where it was like, for 4 years, we remained at around 10%, right, yep. of the population in cybersecurity being women. And a lot of people say, we got to get that number up, et cetera. But again, the interesting fact about that is why did we go stagnant? And the reason why yeah. is because more women were leaving the field
right.
than were entering it. So we had all these pipeline things pushing women into cyber. And, you know, you get to that mid-level and you're burnt out.
Yes.
For a number of different reasons.
Okay.
And so women were leaving the field. Mm-hmm. And that was a major issue. I think we're starting to turn the curve on that. And with a lot of different programs that, you know, CyberJitsu is part of, as well as other
yes.
other organizations.
Cool. I want to get back and deep dive into CyberJitsu and some of that stuff in a bit. I want to turn us back towards gamification and security, sure. like learning games and so forth. So, you know, I think we all know gamification is one of those terms like AI and machine learning that can signify something really exciting or can just as easily be a meaningless buzzword uttered to, you know, appear at the top of trends. So, you know, it's something that if applied well can make an ideas stick in practical ways. So can you tell me about your relationship to gamification as a way of making security ideas stick? What are your guiding principles in using gamified study and training?
I think one of the important principles to realize is that cybersecurity is not just a buzzword, right? Mm-hmm. As you might recall, 10, 15 years ago, it was IT security and cybersecurity were interchangeable.
Right.
Right.
Totally.
I don't actually believe that.
Yeah.
I believe cybersecurity is different. It's fundamentally different. We have good guys and we have bad guys. We have mm-hmm. bad actors. We have defenders.
Right.
And the beauty of that is that means that cybersecurity is a tradecraft. Right? It's an mm-hmm. art form
mm-hmm.
and it's very much like a sport. And so one of the guiding principles that I have when it comes to gamification is cybersecurity is a sport. It requires hands-on practice. We're talking about interactive learning right. with others as a team or an individual. And one of the cool parts is that competition we have found builds the best. Through games, through interactions, whether it's planting flags or going red team versus blue team or solving puzzles, what you're doing is you're using competition to build the best, both the best in individuals, in tactics, in community, and in teams. And it's very rare. If you look at something like accounting or human resource or, plumbing, right?
Yeah.
Cybersecurity is fundamentally different because of these principles, right? We can use competition not just to better ourselves, but hey, to also score ourselves and to differentiate ourselves for jobs. And it has a really exciting piece of it. Now, how is that different than gamification, right? Because that's a gamification, like you said, is a big term. It's like saying AI. Mm-hmm. It's how you apply it.
Right.
What I would say is that it's, you know, when you look at gamifications for losing weight or for stop smoking or something like that, right?
Yeah.
It's all about points and making it fun and all that great stuff.
Yep.
The thing about cybersecurity is it's a difference from having a junior analyst go from just applying controls, right? Mm-hmm. And going through a manual process, if you will, to an analyst being able to see, a security professional being able to see an attack is occurring. Here's what the attacker is doing and what their motives are. Here's what my strategy is to defend against it. So now I have a strategist, right? You don't teach that in school. And that's part of the problem if you're trying to break into the cybersecurity market.
Yes.
And you're coming out with a college degree in cybersecurity. We all kind of know it takes about 5 to 7 years to really get acclimated in the space and know your stuff, because it's so much of just living the life, right? On the job training. There's studies out there, Chris, that show that through games and competitions and tournaments in cybersecurity, through doing CTFs, capture the flags, we can actually decrease that time to value for that professional to 2 to 3 years, if not less than that, if they start, let's say, in high school. And the reason is because you're experiencing it, right? You're not just experiencing it, but you're also doing it with others. So think about our kids nowadays, right? What are they doing? They're playing games, but they're also watching other people play games.
Yes.
Right? So they're learning that way. And in fact, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago now, the National High School Association recognized esports as an athletic program. And that opened up scholarships, et cetera. So I would contend that cybersecurity CTFs and the future of gaming and cybersecurity is going to go towards esports, because that's, why not? Let's have some scholarships there. Let's teach kids how to work together as a team.
Right.
Because interesting, going back to my days when I had security professionals reporting to me as part of a security program, one of the tactics that from an HR recruiting standpoint that we would utilize is we would recruit in groups of 2 or 3.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because real cybersecurity is teamwork, right? It takes a team dynamic. It takes communication. It creates and trust. And it's very rare that you have a sole pen tester, right? Usually have a team of 3 or 4 pen testers, depending on the size of the network, go out and they all bring different skills. And what they do is that, you know, best athlete approach, depending on what the tactic there is. And that allows them to take advantage of every slight modification or opportunity they have, because they only get one opportunity before the system resets, right? And they lose that that opportunity to attack and find the vulnerability. So my point is that if we can teach games, cybersecurity games, to high school, college, and professionals, we can help with that teamwork dynamic and really bring strategy into games, which is way more than points or emojis or, you know, little fun little things.
Yeah. I mean, can you talk a little bit about, for people who are trying to, you know, design or choose programs that are gamified, like how do you sort of move past those trappings of badges and point systems and leaderboards and stuff and sort of come to something that, you know, what are the guiding principles in terms of like designing or choosing or, getting your employees on board with such a thing?
I think it has to do with, one of the things is, understand how you're, so there's really in cybersecurity, there's kind of, the way I look at it is there's really like two kinds of games. You have security awareness, which is really about teaching security principles to non-security people, right? And then you have cybersecurity training and education, which is about cultivating security professionals, right? With more skills and knowledge and capability. So in terms of security awareness, you really have got to think about your diversity of your player set, right? You're going to have older people that perhaps aren't really into games, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to have younger people that are more into games than they are into the knowledge piece of it. You're going to want to have a little mix of both and know who you're targeting. Some people are going to want to play alone. Some are going to want to play as a cohort. But you kind of need to understand that dynamic and make it very simple, right? Very engaging and relevant to them in terms that are very sticky. So it's applying marketing principles, which is nice. Now, on the other hand, when you go into security professionals training and education, I really think that understanding who, again, your target is for the player, what you're trying to accomplish, but also working, there's a lot of wonderful people out there doing some really cool programs. Take NIST NICE, which is really dedicated to cybersecurity workforce, right? You can look at their workforce framework. If you're a game and out there, or you're gamifying training in cybersecurity, if you're not mapping to them, then you're not really doing cybersecurity education. Mm-hmm. Education and training really needs to align with the workforce framework so that we can all understand what skills you're trying to teach, right? Which is one critical piece. And then the other critical piece is having that output back to the user, the player, so they know what is it that they just learned and how does this apply to, you know, me as an individual, my resume, my ability to sell myself to a company, and my ability to contribute as a better security professional. So right. I said, that's kind of pieces of it. I think the other thing to keep in mind is these things are hard. When you look at esports and games, whether you're playing Battle Royale or any of those out in the market, they have huge development teams that are constantly building environments that are engaging, and they're freshening it up. They're keeping it as fresh as they can on a daily basis. And it's huge and it's hard because... Yeah. People are demanding, right? They want instant gratification and they want it to change and they want it to be cool.
Right.
I wouldn't let that stop you, but just keep that in mind when you're trying to come up with your development style and approach.
Yeah. Okay. So to sort of move it in a different direction, you know, obviously cybersecurity is serious business, and, you know, many organizations take that to heart when it comes to employee training, but you know, that might make things hard for a security or training manager to quote unquote sell a gamified learning environment to leadership or decision makers, you know, who might see it as maybe like frivolous or something like that in this circumstance. How would you make the case for gamified learning over more traditional training experiences, or a combination of the two?
I think it goes back to something I said earlier, and that is the experience piece of it. It goes back to that major principle that says cybersecurity is different, right?
Mm-hmm.
The hands-on piece is really where we need to get to. It's not enough to sit in a classroom doing a boot camp where somebody is just teaching you, right? Yes. You've got to be able to apply it.
Yep.
Now, that applying is difficult, right? This is why so many security professionals I know, they have a network set up in their house, right? That they can break apart and do stuff on.
Oh, yeah.
That's a typical kind of thing. Well, here's the thing. You've got, you know, work 8 to 10 hours a day. Then you've got family and you've got other things that are you know, work-life balance, if you will. It's very difficult. Now layer on top of that, it's not like the olden days. If you start trying your hacking skills on the internet, you're going to get in trouble.
Yes.
You know,
right,
there's no safe place for you to play.
Yes.
Right. And you can say, okay, there's cloud environments, et cetera. Okay, but I need a little bit more structure than that, right?
Yeah, totally.
So if employers really want to have the strength that they need to provide game environments and CTFs for their security professionals. Here's another little tidbit that I personally learned, and I would share if any companies are out there listening and trying to say, is this really worth it or not?
Yeah.
I used to manage a team, like I said, right? And we had pen testers. And it was, you know, we're a large government contracting firm. So a lot of times what will happen is somebody on your team will get a higher paying job somewhere else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this individual on the team came up to me and said, you know, I want to move to this other contract. It's going to put me on site with this this client, and I get more money, right? And I'm like, in the long run, you won't. And they didn't believe me and they left. And this is why we do third-party testing as well. What happens is when you have a security individual working with the same client day in and day out, all they see is that environment. They don't get to see live stuff. They don't get to see other environments. They don't get to see other threats or other approaches or anything. And you get almost this think tank mentality, which actually dulls your skills, your awareness. And it's very hard to stay abreast of what's happening in our very dynamic space.
Right.
Which is why they like third-party pen testers, right? You can have these very sharp, brilliant pen testers or adversary emulation experts that now go from environment to environment to environment. They're seeing everything and they're doing things constantly to sharpen their skills and their awareness. That cultivates a different individual that gets higher pay, is more engaged, and has more value to a company. So I would say, okay, so either outsource cybersecurity or provide your security professionals a way where they can sharpen their skills in a safe environment that allows them to hack. And that was a big thing, Chris. If you don't mind, we had a report.
Sure.
We did a report where we interviewed like 27 experts in the field a couple of years ago. And this was all about cybersecurity games. And we interviewed college teachers, professors. We interviewed CISOs. We interviewed recruiters. And we interviewed players. And we took a look and said, why aren't games really taking, evolving more? And there was a distinct problem that we had in the space. And that was when you look at high school and colleges, they want to teach IT security, right? They want to teach, this is how you harden. These are just practical things. So when they graduate, that's all they know. The problem is when you go to the CISO and the recruit of the CISO wants, I want somebody who's broken something. I want them to understand the dynamics of an attack. What does it look like? How does things happen? And when I go back to the high school teachers and the college professors, they're like, no, we don't teach hacking. Right. I don't know how many high schools in Maryland we talked to in the first years of MDC3, where the teacher's like, why are you asking our kids to learn to hack? And it comes down to they have to understand how to break things, right? Yeah. How to take things apart.
Right.
In order for them to really understand how to make it stronger. Mm-hmm. And so that was a major issue that we had. And then you had the recruiters that we talked to. And the problem with the recruiters were, just how do I know if Chris and you are on the same team and you guys get first place, how do I know which one did what? Are you really just as good as Chris? Are you less? Did he pull the weight? How do I know? And how do I use the results of your game to really help say that to, my hiring manager, if you will. And so there was a problem there too. And so I think we're getting around that. I think people are starting to understand more of the value. I think they're starting to understand, not be as afraid of hacking. But the only way to get around all of that is more games and more safe environments to allow people to do more hacking.
Perfect. I mean, that leads right into my next question here. I wanted to, for those of us who couldn't attend and want to live vicariously through it, can you tell us about the Wicked Six Cyber Games Tournament and the Cyber Carnival program? Like what types of games and challenges and training were people taking part in?
Absolutely. So you can actually go to wicked6.com or you can find it on YouTube channel for if you do like Wicked Six Cyber Games, you can look at it. We did live streaming of the event. I think it's like 5 hours long, but you can kind of go through it and see what's happening. So Wicked Six is put on by the Women's Society of Cyber Jitsu, right? That 501c3 that I sit on the board for.
Yep.
And Cat's Eye is the marketing firm that runs the event. But it is primarily a fundraiser to help fund women and girl camps, cyber camps, if you will, throughout the year. And so what we did was we tried to really touch into the fun, the sexiness of cyber competitions. We partnered with Circadence. We had lots of wonderful sponsors like Microsoft and Uber and many, many more. We had a wonderful advisory board as well. We opened it up for qualifications. We, I think we had something like 21 colleges, all types of colleges, community colleges, universities, master programs, et cetera. We just said, if you're a school, if you're a full-time student, you qualify. And they went through a qualification, online qualification process where we had games that they had to pass and get scores on. Then we got it down to the Wicked Six, right? The six top colleges.
Yes.
And we brought them to the HyperX Arena. So the HyperX Arena is awesome, right? Yeah. It's right there in the Luxor in Las Vegas. It's got stadium seating, a beautiful stage. You know, you've got the gamer chairs, you've got insights mm-hmm. on what's happening on the screen. We have the back room, like ESPN kind of show going on. We have shoutcasters talking about, you know, what's the play, who are the players, what are the coaches, et cetera. And we kind of have about a 4 or 5 hour program that really takes them through technical challenges as a team, policy challenges as a team, and they continue to score against each other. And then we come up with a final. And it's kind of like college football, right? Everybody has their favorite team.
Right.
And
sections.
So Women's Society of Cyber Jitsu is obviously focused on women, right. But Wicked Six is a co-ed thing, right? Okay. We do make a requirement. You've got to have a woman who's actively playing at all times so that we could have that diversity piece to it.
Yep.
But it's a fabulous experience. You know, hats off to Sir Cadence. They did a wonderful job. Here's how they gamified it that makes it exciting is they started off with a video that really sets the mission, right? Understanding what's the situation you're in.
Okay.
And then they take them through a number of puzzles and challenges, et cetera, that follow that mission that is either you're securing a SCADA system or you're a financial system or whichever. You take them through real live attacks and they get to see what those things look like and they get to then react to them and they're scored based on that and score goes up and down if they get hints or not and it's timed. And what we tried to do differently in Wicked Six than let's say some of the bigger programs is that we made each game only an hour long.
Okay.
That really helps to keep it moving, if you will.
Right.
Because some of these cyber competitions, I interviewed, I want to say like 30, 40 players. It's amazing. They will practice and prep for 3 to 4 months, meeting three or so times a week for some of these bigger CTFs. And the CTFs are 2 to 3 days long, right? They're almost like Hacker Fest, right?
Yeah.
And it's a very stressful. You know, we wanted something different, light and fun. So it was short games.
Yep.
So that's Wicked Six. We'll be doing it again this August.
Okay.
So we're excited about that. And we'll probably be making more of an announcement and getting words out probably late February on that. And so then last year for October, you know, here we are all in COVID.
Right.
And we're going to, what is it, like 180 conferences in cybersecurity that happened in October. So we said, hey, why don't we put on a carnival of games? Right. And so what we did was we worked with various different platforms, some focused on awareness and some focused on security education. We had a mixture of both. And we came up with a schedule of games that were available for people to play at no cost. And they could win things. So each week we did like, you know, various different prizes. Somebody got a Google Nest, somebody got a, you know, $10 Domino's pizza. They were one of our sponsors, you know, things like that. And they got challenge coins at the end of it. So that was kind of fun, right? And it was just supposed to be fun to really kind of open up people to games. And it was a mixture. We didn't realize, Chris, that this is a global phenomenon, you know,
wow.
We were thinking we did it. We'd focus on the US, you know, no biggie. And we only marketed to the US, but somehow the world found out. And I would say a good 20% of our players were global and top 20%, like the ones that won prizes.
Yeah,
it was wonderful. The diversity that we saw, incredible. I would also say that, the dedication we saw people put into some of this was wonderful as well. When you look at the numbers that came out, we had about 500 players total, and only 20% were high school or college. So some professionals were playing, So it was great. We tried to do all the games at night and weekends, so it wouldn't interrupt work. That made it harder globally, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the feedback that we got is, you know, trying to do some day games too.
Oh, there you go.
So we'll be mixing it up this October.
Okay.
But it's exciting.
Now, you mentioned a little bit about security awareness games within there and stuff. Do you have any tips? We've been talking a lot about sort of hacking games and sort of teaching, you know, up-and-comers how to break things so that they can learn to secure things. Do you have any tips or advice for developing gamified security awareness campaigns?
I think that they're becoming more, the virtual games are kind of here. Because of work from home, right?
Right.
There's a lot of mixture of games. There's some really wonderful programs out there with Insight. They have, everybody loved playing that game. It was amazing. It was brand new in October. It's fun. It's very much like Pokemon. It's on your device and it's very quick. And the beauty of that game was that even if you weren't a security professional, you could play the game and have fun. But the more you understood, the more fun it was. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And the better you were at the game. But it really, the developers over there have done a wonderful job of really engaging players in a quick, fast pace. Some games last 7 minutes, some last 20. So I would definitely check them out. Living Security, I don't know if you guys have heard of them. They do escape rooms and they have some amazing programs now virtually, both hosted and self. So I would check them out. They were wonderful. Living Security, I asked them to do it for my own team, my marketing team, to give us kind of exposure to it. And it was great to see the team work together, you know, to look at the different things and understand the different policies applied. And it really does help. I think it helps make it real and relevant a lot better than just, hey, read this flyer or here's the latest security policy, sign it and you're done.
Yeah, totally.
And it helps them take it home. That's the beauty of security awareness is that when companies invest in security awareness games and programs, they're sticky enough that not only are they doing it for their work stuff, but they're bringing it home. So when they work from home, you know, their work environment, their home is less prone to security issues, right?
Yes.
And that's really important. And they're teaching their kids, they're teaching their parents, they're teaching people that they're associated with. So I think that's a growing space we'll see a lot more in the next coming years.
So can we talk about gamified security challenges as a way to possibly bring in potential cybersecurity professionals who might not have thought of this as a career or vocation before? We're talking a lot about diversity and bringing more women in and more minority professionals, and is there a chance that, you know, these types of gamified programs can attract new and passionate people who might not have been previously considered for this type of work through the standard job fair, HR, school guidance, counselor channels?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's why I have such passion for this is, oh my gosh, you're gonna make me cry. I'm not supposed to do that on podcasts. So MGC3, the very first year, was exhausted. And I sat down at this cocktail table and this guy was watching the competition and he grabbed the seat next to me and just kind of sat there. And he was just wowed and he was a little teary eyed, you know, 40 some year old man sitting there. And I'm like, so how's it going? Because I'm from Texas. I'll talk to anybody. And he's like, I'm just in shock and amazed. You don't understand. I'm like, why? And he's like, he goes, you see that kid right there? That's my son. And my son, you know, 6 months ago, he didn't know what to do with his life. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get him to do job applications. Here he is, a freaking senior, and he wasn't even interested in college. I didn't think he was going to go to college at all.
Right.
And all he would do was play his games, right? And he was an introvert. He wasn't really into programs of like athletics or any of the after school programs. And I was really starting to worry about him. And then it got worse. He said he disappeared. He stopped coming home right after school and mm-hmm. he'd be with friends. And I was convinced he was doing drugs, right. You know, that he was doing something bad. And then the other day he comes up to me and say, hey, Dad, can you take me to Baltimore? Because I've been practicing with this team over the last few weeks and we qualified and we're going to play this game. And now he's talking about colleges and he's talking about a career in cybersecurity. He's like, I had no idea, you know? And it was, it changed his life because the kids can actually see what it would be like, right? Mm-hmm. It's not this weird philosophy, programming, boring kind of thing. They get to be part of something that's bigger.
Yes.
And the cool part of that is the diversity piece, right? We use games at Cyberjitsu to really involve women. And the reason is because they are safe in some ways, culturally safe, right? They you can do them from your house, all virtual. You don't have to worry. You can go in person. And it's a game, so it's not taken as seriously, right? So mm-hmm. you can mess up.
Yeah.
And it's okay to ask for help. And people want to help you because, you know, the stronger the team is.
Sure.
So this helps tap into a lot of different diversity groups, and it helps get people hands-on exposure to what a career might look like, as well as help them learn a few things, and they get some confidence, right, in it. And they're like, hey, maybe I could do this for a living. And I think that that's really important. I think it also helps. It's not as much pressure as a work environment, so you can kind of cultivate better relationships and learn how to team with different cultures, mm-hmm. which is kind of nice. I will say that our world has definitely changed in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
The barrier to entry on games is so low. You can get it on your phone.
Right.
You can do it from your computer. You can do it from home, from the coffee shop. Between technology and infrastructure, and the way that we're simplifying cybersecurity with visuals and such, it's just really opening up and tapping new areas and new pools of diverse folks.
That's fantastic. And so I want to move from that to, we sort of put a pin in it before, but I want to talk about specific, you know, put front and center Women's Society of Cyberjitsu, and your work with it. We had Mary Galloway on the show earlier as well, and had a lot of fun with her as well. But, you know, you said earlier in the program that 10% of the cybersecurity industry is made up of women. And part of that is just the sort of, the burnout rate and people leaving. Can we sort of talk about that issue? Because I mean, I'm sure some of that is, like you said, the repetition of it, but some of it has to be a culture issue as well, right? There's a certain point where, you know, let's just put it on the table. Like, we might not feel that welcome in some of these sort of monocultured situations. So like what are some of the, you know, I love hearing that, you know, gamification is bringing new sort of voices to the table and encouraging collaborations and stuff like that. So what are your thoughts on the sort of burnout issues and the cultural fit issues and all of that aspect of things?
Yeah, we've come a long way. Mm-hmm. We have come a long way with diversifying the workforce in cybersecurity, but we still have a long way to go. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It is still very much a mafia, if you will, if it's not, because it's very masculine, right? Mm-hmm. Which it totally is very masculine. But it's also, there's a lot of, if you look at the history of where cybersecurity jobs come from, right? A lot of people don't realize that for the most part, cybersecurity jobs really started around Clinger-Cohen. So that was regulation. It was what, 1996 was a CIO role. Mm-hmm. That wasn't that long ago. I mean, longer for us, but you know, for people that have been in the community, it wasn't that long ago. So you had, you definitely had, in order for it to be created, you pulled from other workforce pipelines, right? You pulled from law enforcement, you pulled from IT, and believe it or not, from information management, so librarians and such. So you had really these three groups of people come together to create a cybersecurity workforce. And because of that, there was a lot of cultural issues. And it's difficult for women in cybersecurity because of that, because of it being very much the way it's grown up. People perceive that cybersecurity careers are really, you have to like do your time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You've got to, you can't just jump into something. You got to do your time.
Paying your dues.
Mm-hmm. Paying your dues, and that it, you know, you have to have a certain number of certs and you got to have years of experience and you got to be able to talk the lingo and drop the names.
Had this mentor or
and
whatever.
All that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it can be very overwhelming if you're not familiar and you can recognize that and say, you know, I'm just not going to play that game. You know, I'm here. I have value. And it takes encouragement. There's a lot of, also what happens is that because of all the lingo, if you will, and the technical certs, et cetera, and the way recruiters do their job requirements, a lot of women will look at a job and say, one, that's boring. Yep. Two, I'm not qualified.
Right.
And three, they're, you know, they're not going to teach me. They just expect me to know all this stuff when I get there.
Yeah.
And
they're going to try and punish me if I don't know it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm going to look bad or, you know, I can't spend that much time. It's going to take me a lot of time to catch up or get educated. And what we try to do within cyber jitsu is break down those myths for women and say, one, you got us, we're your tribe, right?
Yeah.
So you can call on us, you can post, you can be part of Slack and get help and mentorship right there from women that have been in cybersecurity. We also have this issue of, and this is actually much better with COVID. I mean, I hate to say that, but there are some good things that have happened over the last year, right? Mm-hmm. This work from home aspect has been good in some ways. The education and distance learning stuff, not so good for women. In fact, this is actually hurting women quite a bit right now. And it's one of those issues that definitely keeps me up at night. It has allowed people to recognize the fact that you can work from home and you can break away from the 8 to 5, right? You can do, you know, work from 6 a.m. in the morning till 10, deal with the kids and other stuff, and then come back at 1 and work, and then deal from 3 to 5 family, and then 7, pick it back up. So people are getting more flexible. And as that happens, that's going to help with diversity as well. There's that piece of it that we're dealing with. I think that the imposter thing is really relevant. Yeah. It's also one of the things I have a blog on is about, you know, not seeking perfection. Women are groomed from a very young age, unlike men, right? Mm-hmm. We're groomed to seek perfection, right? Yep. Make sure your eyes are on point, your head's up, your posture is good.
Right.
You do the right thing. Right. There's perfection that women seek or girls seek. And it's, you know, some of the best dads in the world, they find themselves at fault because they're teaching their girls perfection. What are they teaching the boys? They're teaching the boys perseverance. You get, you know, pushed down, get back up, you know, you fail, get back up, you know, try again and try again. And so what we need to do is we need to kind of change that and teach our girls, you can continue to teach them perfection. There's nothing wrong with that, but also teach them get back up, you know, because half the job is just persevering. And in cybersecurity or entrepreneurship, it's all about persevering because you're not going to get it 100% and you're never going to be perfect.
No.
Right. It's not about being perfect. It's about figuring it out as you go. And that's what we try to help with women. I think as more women start to recognize that, they're going to realize the beauty, and there is a lot of value in being a cybersecurity professional. And some of the research that Gartner has done about women shows that yes, they're burnt out and they're leaving because of being berated, because of being told to shut up at work, because of creating more of a masculine environment that says you got to go to the bar afterwards in order to, you know, hobnob to get to the next career when they need to go home and cook dinner. You know, there is that. But when you look at what I want a job in IT or cybersecurity, more women say they want jobs in cybersecurity. And it comes back to that mission thing. Women have a heart. They want to know they're making a difference. They're not just making a buck, right? If I'm going to choose to spend my time here versus at home, I want to know my time is valued, right? Yeah. And cybersecurity tells them that, you know, it feeds them that, hey, you are defending and you can make a difference. And the cool part is women are really good at it because they can see a lot of, they're not very linear. They can multi-process and see a lot of situational awareness because they're used to doing that. They're used to somebody saying, you know, get this deadline done. Oh, mommy, can I, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they've got to redirect, pivot, come back, you know, kind of thing. So we try to create a very nurturing and encouraging environment. to help women advance in cyber careers, because it really will help the workforce and our community at large.
Yeah. Now this, I mean, this hour is, has just blown by, and it's been just a blast. And I could talk for hours with you about this, but I want to start us toward our descent here. So as we wrap up today, what are some of the events, you know, you talked a little bit about it, but what is Wicked Six or Cyber Carnival going to be looking like for 2021? What kind of projects do you have in the pipeline, and where can people sort of track what's going to happen next?
I would track the womencyberjitsu.org.
Okay.
We're going to have some announcements coming out. You know, we have Cyber Jitsu Con, which is coming in June. That is a virtual conference for women and men, but really kind of the messaging is towards women.
Yep.
But it's open for both. And the cool part is we try to make it as hands-on as possible. So some of the sessions, you know, it's not your typical panel 1 hour. We have those, but we have 2.5 hour work sessions too.
Okay.
Where we actually have some code and we're playing with Python, et cetera. So that can be fun. In the next few weeks, we're going to be making some announcements through Cyber Jitsu and through Cat's Eye about what's going to be happening around RSA this year. It's virtual. For your audience, if you've never been to RSA, you got to go this year because it's virtual.
Right.
And it's in May 17th through the 20th. We're going to be having some programs and some cyber tournaments around that timeframe.
Okay.
And some cyber job career fairs kind of things too. So I would keep an eye out for that. Again, some of the plans we can't quite announce, but they're coming in the next few weeks.
Okay.
So definitely look at womencyberjitsu.org. playcyber.com is a great site.
Okay.
I think it's by Cat's Eye, so I'm kind of biased. But that's where we're going to be announcing some of the games as well. We're going to be doing a tournament in partnership with the US Cyber Range. They're about May timeframe. So that's going to be fun. We have, that's also where you can find out about Wicked Six. That will be happening in August, which means, you know, qualifying rounds really have to happen in May, June timeframe. So we got to get the word out there soon. And then we have quite a few more games. I think it's like 4 or 5 games that we've got planned this year. Big tournaments as well as small little things that are fun to do.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. Cyber Carnival, October. I'm sorry. I forgot about that one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Jessica, well, thank you again for all of your time and insights today. This has been a blast.
Thanks. Take care.
And thank you all for listening and watching. New episodes of the CyberWork podcast are available every Monday at 1 p.m. Central, both on video at our YouTube page and on audio wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. And don't forget to check out our hands-on training series called CyberWork Applied. Tune in as expert InfoSec instructors teach you a new cybersecurity skill and show you how that skill applies to real-world scenarios. Go to infosecinstitute.com/learn to stay up to date on all things CyberWork. Thank you once again to Jessica Gulick and Cat's Eye, and thank you all for watching and listening. We will speak to you next week. How about some free cybersecurity training resources for you and your team? Just go to infosecinstitute.com/free to get ebooks, training guides, and more than 100 cybersecurity training courses, all free for CyberWork listeners. Go to infosecinstitute.com/free and start learning crucial new skills today.